This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'd like now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Rebecca Sobel. She's Senior Climate and Energy Campaigner at Wild Earth Guardians, and Alex Ranieri, who is with the Beyond Dirty Fuels campaign for the Sierra Club. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having us, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you so much.
So we are here to talk about fracking in the West, the Keep It in the Ground movement, and our energy future, both in the West and on a larger scale. The occasion for our conversation is that on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, the 20th of April, the Bureau of Land Management is holding an oil and gas lease sale in Santa Fe at the Courtyard Marriott. Rebecca, what's this all about?
Sure. So many folks may not be aware that our Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, a headquarters state office here in Santa Fe, and about four times a year, they are budgeted to auction off public lands to oil and gas industry interest for development. This coming Wednesday, we are seeing our state office auction off public lands in the region. And the next state auction is set to happen in July, the one after that in October. And really, some of these leases go for as low as $1.50 an acre.
What?
$1.50 an acre to develop our public land for fracking.
And so what is at stake here is a lot of different things. I mean, one is the carbon impact. Talk about that.
Sure, absolutely. So folks may also not know that the federal government has what we call a federal fossil fuel leasing program. So we lease public lands for coal, also for tar sands shale oil, for oil and gas, natural gas extraction. And cumulatively, these federal fossil fuel leasing programs account for a quarter of United States climate emissions. And it's sort of why we're calling for an end to these programs, that to sell off or even give away our public land for short-term industry profit at the sacrifice and detriment to our long-term cultural communities, the health of our communities and our water resources, isn't in the best interest of Americans. And we're calling for an end to this program, which would in effect take off the carbon equivalent of roughly 118,000 power plants if we don't develop new federal fossil fuel leases.
So, I mean, that's a very big percentage of our total carbon impact.
Absolutely. I think most folks don't know. I mean, if you're following the news, you're seeing that the coal industry is dying slash pretty much dead, Peabody Coal filing for bankruptcy. Most folks don't know that these private industries are using public land to develop these resources and saddling the public with the costs of fossil fuel development.
Now, Alex, what are some of those costs of fossil fuel development?
One of the biggest climate impacts that oil and gas extraction has is the impact not only of burning the fossil fuels, but obviously produces CO2, but the methane that's actually released from fracking operations at a much greater rate than traditional oil and gas development. So that's something that the Sierra Club has been addressing and looking at, is national standards to reduce methane emissions, which is essentially natural gas seeping out of oil and gas operations every single day. It's a commonplace occurrence. And methane is about 86 times more powerful than CO2 over 20 years.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think is important to stress. I mean, some of our listeners already know this, but methane is a very, very powerful greenhouse gas, more than CO2.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's, you know, along the way towards keeping fossil fuels in the ground, there are many protections that we can implement immediately to protect our communities, to protect the folks in New Mexico and across the country who are living, you know, right next door to oil and gas development. And one of those things that we're talking about, and that the EPA and the BLM are in the process of rulemaking on this issue, is cutting methane emissions from the oil and gas industry, which is the largest industrial source of methane emissions in this country.
So methane is an issue. There's another issue, and carbon, the carbon that will go into the atmosphere with the oil and gas that are developed from these leases, that's an issue. There's yet another issue, which is safe drinking water. What's going on with that? There's a recent report from the Environmental Protection Agency on that.
Right, there is. Yeah, so up until this month, really, the EPA had, you know, even though our local communities have known for years and years that fracking is obviously linked to drinking water contamination, the EPA just this month put out its first study that confirmed that, in fact, groundwater contamination has linked to fracking, and that was just this March. So they're part of an ongoing study that's looking at the health impacts of fracking, and we're just starting to see conclusive evidence from the federal regulators that our communities have known, you know, since fracking became commonplace and since oil and gas drilling in this country.
What does that look like on the ground? There was one movie that I saw, a documentary I saw some years ago, where people would turn on their tap and set it on fire and things like that. I mean, what and where does this happen? What does it look like?
I think you're talking about the movie Gasland. But
there are a couple of them.
Yeah, there are a couple of them. It's an interesting question. So some folks consider New Mexico has been considered an oil and gas industry state. In the northern part of the San Juan Basin, for instance, we've got close to 40,000 natural gas wells, and people have been saying we have been fracking out there for some 40, 60 years. What's happening now is a new form of fracking development that's still called fracking. It's the combination of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing. So instead of typical wells that will go straight into the ground vertically, this is a well that's using a tremendous amount of high pressure with fresh drinking water, typically, to shoot into the ground bed, loosen up what's happening in Chaco areas, the Manco Shale Formation. And it often is very deep in the ground, and it has 90-degree angle tendrils that go out in every direction. So the original surface impact of a new fracking well may be less. And they say that typically when we use this type of fracking, the industry says that typically when we use this type of fracking, it's equivalent to 4 vertical wells. But the subsurface impact of these types of wells are so much larger and more tremendous. It's not a matter of where does this happen. It's when do we discover this when fracking activities are happening. And right now, the immediate impacts that we see in areas like Chaco, folks are responding to the industrialization of their landscape, so that needing to build more roads for these massive trucks that are carrying equipment in and out of these huge well pads, and the unsavory element that this kind of industry brings into their communities. We are hearing anecdotal reports about rainbow sheens in waters, of gas leaks, of people smelling hydrogen sulfide, which is very deadly, a rotten egg smell. But to prove these links will take us some time, and unfortunately the damage may already be done by then.
That is one of the problems that we are continually dealing with, which is not taking an attitude of preventing harm, but of dealing with harm when it comes along, and then not really taking responsibility for that harm when it comes along. I mean, that seems to be the history of energy development.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, we talk about climate change as absolutely the most important environmental issue, but it's also the most important economic issue, human rights issue, immigration issue, and social justice issue, specifically because those that are hardest hit by climate change and climate change impacts and the industry that's fueling climate change are also those that are generally the most hardest hit in our society at large. So especially when we're talking about the Chaco area and the affected tri-chapter community that are now seeing an increase in the past few years of 300 wells that are right along the UNESCO World Heritage Site borders.
What kind of impacts? We started out talking about drinking water. Is that something we're also seeing in Chaco, or where are we seeing these drinking water impacts?
Well, Alex can speak to some of the reports that were just recently released. If folks have been watching movies related to fracking, you can see that all across Oklahoma, western Pennsylvania, and New York, people are lighting their faucets on fire. There's a fracking well pad, for instance, right across the street from Liebrook Elementary School up in Counselor Chapter, that greater Chaco area. That school has been closed on multiple occasions because of smells of gas leaks. And what happens when we're dealing with disenfranchised communities is, why aren't you hearing about these stories? Some of these folks are 200 miles away from a supermarket and a hospital, and we need to be elevating these issues to force our decision makers and policy leaders to pay attention and to start to study these impacts.
Right. And just to add in, every single well in the Chaco area requires 1.3 million gallons of fresh water to be fracked and drilled. So that's just an astronomical number, especially when climate change hits New Mexico disproportionately in terms of rainfall and drought. We don't have that water to spare. And then I also want to just speak a little bit about the health impact of methane. And, you know, something that often isn't recognized in addition to the impact on water and the community impacts, like Rebecca is talking about. Methane, when it seeps out of the pipes and of the equipment that pumps the natural gas that we extract from the land from place to place, is emitted alongside co-pollutants that we call volatile organic compounds. And those contribute to smog, which has significant adverse health effects, including asthma attacks and other respiratory ailments. And then other toxic air pollutants like benzene is released alongside the methane, and that has been known to cause cancer and increased risk of birth defects, reduced fertility, and a whole host of other health issues. So the problem is really has many, many layers.
And once again, this is something that I almost feel like a broken record talking about, but it's once again the issue of privatized profits and socialized dealing with the harm that is caused. So the companies that are making a profit on oil and gas or whatever it is that is being drilled, they're not going to pay for the birth defects and for the many health problems that might arise from their activities.
I mean, they're not going to pay for it on so many levels, unfortunately. We have real at-home examples of what happens when industry ravages some of our shared sacred places and saddles the public with the cost. I mean, it doesn't take much further than to look at the Gold King River spill that happened last summer, tainting the Animas River yellow.
Yeah.
I think there's a term called a avoided cost or externalized cost. So basically, these oil and gas industry executives that are making a lot of money that are out of state are not vested in having to pay with the ramifications of the hospital bills and what it is to be dealing with the adverse climate impacts that are going to be happening, that the drought that continues, the lack of water in communities and having to be trucking in fresh water for home use.
Right. We're talking to Rebecca Sobel and Alex Ranieri about fracking and the Keep It in the Ground movement. Now, let's talk about this Keep It in the Ground movement. First of all, who's involved and what are they calling for?
Sure. There's a growing national movement to keep it in the ground that's targeting upcoming federal auctions for coal, oil shale, natural gas, crude oil, and tar sands on public lands and waters. And we're really seeing what happens when a public lands movement across the West is married with climate objectives, that here in the West, we're ground zero for climate extraction, and we see the impacts of these oil and gas leases in our backyard already. And we're calling specifically on the Obama administration to end the federal fossil fuel leasing program, taking off the table a quarter of U.S. climate emissions and being able to meet our climate objectives that are part of the new international climate Paris agreements. But also, we're calling on our state leaders, our local elected officials, and specifically our congressional delegation, and even BLM State Director Amy Luters here in Santa Fe, to start managing our shared resources with public interest. There has been a tremendous amount of new public interest and engagement in these administrative processes where our federal government is selling off our federal land, but that's also our local land, to private short-term interests. And we're calling on folks to get engaged and to create a turning of the tide and a move towards just transitions of jobs that don't cost us land and lives and are in renewable energy.
We're in this position right now in this country where, you know, our government has just signed on to the first plan to mitigate, to take action on climate on the national level in December in Paris. And on April 22nd, which happens to be Earth Day, and just 2 days after this rally, governments from around the world are coming together at the UN headquarters in New York City to sign that Paris deal. So in addition to this effort we're making to keep fossil fuels in the ground and ask President Obama, we're really asking him to take every single action he has in his toolbox right now during his last month in office to mitigate climate change in every way he can. And that includes ending the federal oil and gas leasing program, like Rebecca is talking about, and that includes reducing all sources of methane emissions from the oil and gas industry and protecting our local economies and our local communities' health.
It's such tricky business because, I mean, on the one hand, President Obama is doing some really climate-friendly things, and on the other hand, this program is continuing, and so you have two government actions working in direct opposition to one another.
Yeah, it's like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. Folks may be aware that in January, the Obama administration announced a moratorium on new federal coal leases, and also initiated a multi-year review of the program. And that program provides about 40% of the coal that's used for electricity nationwide. But it's important to note that until that point, the Obama administration has been largely managing the federal coal program as if climate change doesn't exist. So even incorporating climate pollution and climate impacts as an analyzing factor when we're deciding what land should go up for auction and how should we be managing our federal minerals and fossil fuels, we need to be considering climate change, and we will not be able to meet our international climate objectives and avert the worst impacts of climate change, get below a 2 degrees warming of our planet, if we continue with these federal programs.
So this April 20th, Wednesday, April 20th, there is a Bureau of Land Management oil and gas lease sale at the Santa Fe Courtyard Marriott. Is there a protest scheduled?
We're scheduled to be outside and make sure that those entering the auction and the BLM that's there hear the message from the public that this system of giving away our public lands to the oil and gas industry needs to end. So it is a public auction. Members of the public are invited to witness, but we will be outside of the Marriott Hotel holding a rally.
Meanwhile, there are more sales of this kind. In July, there's one that specifically is auctioning off pieces of land here in New Mexico. And then in October, more lease selling in the Chaco Canyon area.
Yeah. Our July parcels are for areas in the Permian Basin, the southeastern part of the state. And in October, we've got more parcels in Chaco up for grabs. Also, we're still waiting to hear whether parcels in the Santa Fe National Forest are up for development as well. What we know is by engaging in these public processes, and there's a couple of different points of intersection in which we can protest BLM parcels that are up for sale, but just by having the public engaged, we are changing the way this program operates. There are some really clear examples since we've been engaging specifically in the lease auctions in November, Western-wide, of some responses that BLM has taken, including this auction that's happening on April 20th, just by having the public engage and participate in protests, we've been able to encourage the BLM to defer close to 30,000 acres that are coming up, that were slated to be auctioned off on April 20th.
And it went from 30,000 acres down to...
It went to about 35,000 acres to a little over 2,000 acres.
Okay, so that's huge.
It is a big deal. It is the beginning of a big deal. We hope we're saying the tide is rising. And while the BLM, it's sort of like while Obama is signing Paris climate agreements, he's still managing this federal fossil fuel leasing program that ties his hands in meeting those agreements, both with BLM, while they're selling off and permitting oil and gas activity on our public lands, they are not yet engaging the public on what a just transition plan to move away from these fossil fuel economies looks like in areas like Four Corners and Farmington.
So I want to hear what both of you have to say about that. What does a just transition really look like?
So I think, and Rebecca has some really good statistics on this too, but for as long as the New Mexico economy is dependent on oil and gas as a, such a bulk of our revenue, we're going to be at the whim of the oil and gas boom and bust. And it seems like whenever the industry is successful and going strong and when oil prices are high, everybody's cheering, but it's just not fair to the folks living in the Four Corners region gas industry to have these busts that we're seeing now. And, we don't want to seem tone deaf to the very real economic state of New Mexico right now. We're just saying that we need to support workers to bring a transition to renewable energy, jobs that don't make people sick, jobs that, don't require people to work at the expense of their family members, their community members' lives and well-being. We're at the brink, like Rebecca said, we're seeing the demise of coal, we're seeing oil and gas continue to have these volatile cycles and influence our economy in some really devastating ways. So it's really only fair to our communities to switch to green energy.
It's true, there's no silver bullet solution for what a just transition looks like. What we do know is that when oil can hit as low as $22 per barrel, that a fossil fuel economy isn't any stabler. What we are asking for is, again, that our leaders start directing plans and investigating and analyzing and planning for what just transitions look like. And sometimes that looks like appropriating a bill like Senator Heinrich has done for renewable energy education in the area. But really, we can't incentivize green energy technology if we are still incentivizing fossil fuels. And everyone, I mean, you don't even need to live in New Mexico to know how sunny it is in New Mexico. We are a state that is blessed with an abundance of natural resources and a very small population. We can more than meet our own energy demand, for instance, with solar power alone. I think that we pulled a stat once that was covering 0.02% of White Sands missile range with satellite-grade PV would more than double meet the state's energy needs.
Oh my goodness.
We know that green jobs are more stable, they're local, and they don't endanger our community members' health. Oftentimes when the oil and gas industry is in place, those jobs come from out of state and they are short-term. There are very few of them that are long-term. And when we are talking about trying to create a just transition, it's also that we're acknowledging that we need to be ending the thing that is damaging our health, our economies, and our climate, but supporting it with solutions that just happen to be great for our economy, providing great jobs, and supporting human health and protecting our water.
We haven't talked about what happens to the land and how it is or isn't cleaned up after the extraction has been done. Can either of you speak to habitat, ecosystems, and overall land health of land that has undergone extractive industry impacts?
It's really hard to talk about it from a esoteric or displaced place. I would encourage all the listeners to drive up 550 up to Farmington, and you can see the impacts of this development firsthand. But you have to think about it. When we're talking about fracking, we are talking about the most industrialized form of energy extraction. So first of all, we're leveling an area, and we're building new roads to be able to bring in new equipment into the area. And we're seeing, it depends on what stage the fracking pad is being developed, but you see a big rig that comes up. That rig is often flaring into the night, disturbing night skies that are there too. You know, up in the Chaco area, it's considered one of the night sky treasures of the country. And when we have flares going off 365 days a year, that sky is no longer dark in and of itself. So there's the small impacts that are certainly visual. The larger impacts when it comes to deep subsurface disturbance and whether we are endangering or threatening endangered species that are in the area. Fortunately, we're not going to know that until it's too late.
Yeah. So Wednesday, April 20th, there is this oil and gas lease sale in Santa Fe. Friday, April 22nd, it's actually a big day, which I've just learned about, which is that the deal that was struck in December in Paris, the Paris Climate Deal, which many consider one of the first really serious steps forward that took climate change seriously and not only countries around the world, but even the United States, which has been historically reluctant to really make any commitments at all. That deal is being signed on Friday, the 22nd of April. What's in it? What's important for the public to know?
You know, the Paris deal was a momentous occasion. Obviously, many of us in the climate community who are working to combat global warming think it's a step in the right direction, but really more than anything, it was just a reminder that we need to get to work and actually take the steps, the policy steps needed to meet our international goals. So in order to meet that, our goals for the international community were to reduce all greenhouse gases by 26 to 28% below 2005 levels by 2025. That's a lot of numbers, I'm sorry. And the piece of that has a lot to do with oil and gas industry is reducing methane emissions by 40 to 45% by 2025. And that's due to the disproportionate potency of methane compared to CO2. So on the 22nd, the 196 nations around the world who signed on to the Paris Climate Deal are meeting in the UN headquarters in New York City to actually sign that agreement. And in order to meet those goals, to meet those commitments, the EPA still needs to propose a rule that covers existing sources of methane pollution from the oil and gas industry. And it'll also still fall short of those goals if it doesn't implement this action to keep federal fossil fuel resources in the ground. So these are kind of two steps that our country can take that are very concrete that will help us really enact those international commitments.
And meanwhile, you are calling various climate and environmental groups are calling on President Obama to end the BLM oil and gas leasing program.
Yeah. So we know that if the U.S. is going to truly tackle the climate crisis, that President Obama needs to stop all new fossil fuel leasing on federal public lands and waters. That step alone would take 450 billion tons of carbon pollution from escaping in the atmosphere.
That's a lot of carbon.
It's equivalent to 118,000 power plants.
As you said earlier.
Yeah.
And would require an equivalent amount of energy because, I mean, we can conserve up to a point, but we still use an awful lot of energy. We're using it right now recording this show, you know. I mean, we're using it all the time. And it has to come from somewhere else.
Sure. And, well, scientists are telling us that in order to meet Paris climate agreements and avert more than a 2% temperature change in temperatures globally, that 80% of fossil fuel reserves need to be kept in the ground. Senator Sanders was part of a bill, the Keep It in the Ground Act, that's working to keep our 80% of our fossil, or it's actually 50% of our fossil fuels in the ground. You know, we're always going to say we need to go further, faster, because we're looking at to truly address climate change, to really truly think about what the impacts of climate change are difficult emotionally, because it's also accepting that the actions that we as a species take are more impactful than any other species in the course of geologic history of this planet. That right now our actions have the ability to impact every other species on the planet for 10,000 plus years to come. And when we're discussing that level of impact, we need to be putting all of our energy and all of our attention into finding solutions. And we know that we're up against big industry. You know, we mentioned Exxon Oil a little bit ago. That's a corporation that since the 1970s has been investing a tremendous amount of resource and intellectual capital in spreading misinformation and trying to keep these industries entrenched and sucking every last drop of oil from the ground until we're saddled with an environmental wasteland and don't have any plans for how we're going to create that sustainable future. What we're trying to say is it's phenomenal that the United States has been slow to the table, but is finally there. And we're taking these first steps to analyze and address climate pollution as a mitigating factor in deciding how we manage our federal public fossil fuels. We also, at the same time, need to be doing a better job than our administration has been doing and be concurrently coming up with those solutions. And like we said before, there is no silver bullet answer, but I see that you're growing vegetables in your backyard, Mary Charlotte, and I'm never one to say that us individually need to make our lifestyle choices that could account for any sweep of a pen that President Obama can do. Because in one sweep of a pen, he can take off close to a quarter of the United States global warming pollution. And we as individuals are hard-pressed to get there collectively. And so we need to incentivize what new just transitions are, and there's no better place in New Mexico with second best solar potential in the country to start making that investment. It's appalling there are more solar panels in New Jersey than there are in the state.
I know, it's ridiculous.
I just want to add that, you know, this is a really amazing opportunity for us in Santa Fe and for us in New Mexico to, you know, because like Rebecca is saying, we are in such an amazing position to be the leaders of climate change action in the country. We have such amazing potential for renewable job creation and, you know, renewable energy development. We could be exporting solar and wind energy. So this lease sale next week is an incredible opportunity to put us on the national stage of the Keep It in the Ground movement. You know, folks have been rising up at these lease sales across the country for months now, talking about the need to keep fossil fuels under the ground, and if we can, you know, show a strong turnout and how many constituencies of New Mexicans care about this issue next week, supporting the national move. Yeah,
we have a lot to lose with drilling around Chaco, drilling Santa Fe, drilling the southeastern part of the state, but we also have a lot to gain, and this is our moment. Not to be waiting for our leaders to come along with us, but to be pushing them further and demanding the solutions that are in all of our best interests.
Rebecca Sobel is with Wild Earth Guardians. Alex Ranieri is with the Beyond Dirty Fuels campaign for the Sierra Club. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you so much. We hope to see you all on Wednesday.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.